Capital in the 21st Century, author Thomas Piketty. The Distribution of Wealth. The distribution of wealth is too important an issue to be left to the economists, sociologists, historians, and philosophers. It's of interest to everyone, and that's a good thing. The concrete physical reality is visible to the naked eye, and naturally inspires sharp but contradictory political judgments. Hence, there will always be a fundamentally subjective and psychological dimension to inequality, which inevitably gives rise to political conflict that no purportedly scientific analysis can alleviate. Democracy will never be supplanted by a republic of experts, and that's a very good thing. The Principle of Scarcity. For David Ricardo, who published The Principles of Political Economy and Taxation in 1817, the chief concern was for the long-term evolution of land prices and land rents. He thought that once both population and output began to grow steadily, land tends to become increasingly scarce relative to other goods. The law of supply and demand then implies that the price of land will rise continuously, as will the rents paid to the landlords. The landlords will, therefore, claim a growing share of national income, and as the share available to the rest of the population decreases, thus upsetting the social equilibrium. For Ricardo, the only logically and politically acceptable answer was to impose steadily increasing tax on land rents. The scarcity principle on which he relied meant that certain prices might rise to very high levels over many decades. This could be enough to destabilize entire societies. The price system plays a key role in coordinating the activities of billions of individuals. The problem is that the price system knows neither limits nor morality. In 1867, exactly one half century after the publication of Ricardo's Principles, economic and social realities had changed profoundly. The question was no longer whether farmers could feed a growing population or land prices would rise sky high, but rather how to understand the dynamics of industrial capitalism now in full blossom. For capital to accumulate and become centred in fewer hands, with no natural limit to the process, this would be prognostic to one of two things. Either the rate of return on capital would steadily diminish, leading to violent conflict among capitalists, or capital's share of national income would increase indefinitely, which sooner or later would unite the workers in a revolt. In either case, inequality was inevitable, and no stable socioeconomic or political equilibrium was possible. Forces of convergence. Consider first the mechanisms pushing towards convergence, that is, towards reduction and compression of inequalities. The main forces for convergence are diffusion of knowledge and investment in training and skills, the law of supply and demand, as well as the mobility of capital and labour, which is invariant of that law, may always tend towards convergence as well, but the influence of this economic law is less powerful than the diffusion of knowledge and skill, and is frequently ambiguous or contradictory in its implications. The progress of technological rationality is supposed to lead automatically to the triumph of human capital over financial capital and real estate, capable managers over fat cat stockholders, and skill over nepotism. Inequalities would thus become more meritocratic and less static, though not necessarily smaller. Economic rationality would then in some sense automatically give rise to the democratic rationality. Another optimistic belief, which is current at the moment, is the idea that class warfare will automatically give way, owing the recent increase in life expectancy to generational warfare. The governing logic is rather one of saving over the life cycle. People accumulate wealth when young in order to provide for their old age. Progress in medicine together with improved living conditions has therefore totally transformed the essence of capital. Forces of divergence. There are certain worrisome forces of divergence. They are worrisome particularly because they can exist in a world where there is adequate investment in skills and where all conditions of market efficiency appear to be satisfied. What are these forces of divergence? First, top earners can quickly separate themselves from the rest by a wide margin. More important, there is a set of forces of divergence associated with the process of accumulation and concentration of wealth, when growth is weak and the return on capital is high. This second process is potentially more destabilizing than the first, and in no doubt represents a principal threat to an equal distribution of wealth over the long run. It is not out of the question that two forces of divergence will ultimately come together in the 21st century. This has already happened to some extent and may yet become a global phenomenon. which could lead to levels of inequality never before seen, as well as to radically new structure of inequality. Thus far, however, these striking patterns reflect two distinct underlying phenomena. The first phenomena is the spectacular increase in inequality, which largely reflects the unprecedented versions and evaluated incomes from labour, a veritable separation of the top managers of large firms from the rest of the population. The second phenomenon reflects a simpler and more transparent divergence mechanism that exerts greater influence on the long run, evolution of the wealth distribution. To start with, R stands for the average annual rate of return on capital, including profits, dividends, interests, rents, and other income from capital, expressed as a percentage of its total value. And G stands for the rate of growth of the economy, that is, the annual increase in income or output. If the rate of return on capital remains significantly above the growth rate or for an extended period of time, then the risk of divergence in the distribution of wealth is very high. When the rate of return on capital significantly exceeds the growth rate, then logically follows inherited wealth grows faster than output and income. Under such conditions, it's almost inevitable that the inherited wealth will dominate wealth amassed from lifetime's labour by a wide margin, and the concentration of capital will attain extremely high levels. What is more, this basic force of divergence can be reinforced by other mechanisms. For instance, the savings rate may increase sharply with wealth, or even more important, the average effective rate of return on capital may be higher when the individual's initial capital endowment is higher, as appears increasingly common. The fact that the return on capital is unpredictable and arbitrary, so wealth can be enhanced in every variety of ways, also poses a challenge to the meritocratic model. Finally, all of these factors can be aggravated by the Ricardian scarcity principle. The high price of real estate or petroleum may contribute to structural divergence. What the right solution could be? The right solution could be a progressive annual tax on capital. This will make it possible to avoid an endless inequalitarian spiral, while preserving competition and incentives for new instances of primitive accumulation. For example, it's possible to set a tax schedule with rates of 0.1 to 0.5% on fortunes under €1 million, 1% on fortunes between 1 and 5 million euros, 2% between 5 and 10 million euros, and as high as 5 or 10% for fortunes of several hundred million or several billion euros. All in all, no one can foresee how things will change in the decades to come. The lessons of history are nevertheless useful, because they help us to see a little more clearly what kinds of choices we will face in the coming century and what sorts of dynamics will be at work. The sole purpose of revisiting capitalism is to draw from the past a few modest keys to the future. Since history always invents its own pathways, the actual usefulness of these lessons from the past remains to be seen.